Oscar.
You just put your hands round my neck, Jess says. What if I get too excited and accidentally squeeze? That's kind of the point. If you squeeze too hard, I'll elbow you in the ribs or something. Don't worry. Oh, come on. It's a real high. I can show you if you want. Then you'll get it. You'd have to take off your necklace. What is that, anyway? Is it teeth?
I'm not sure.
It's probably teeth from girls you've murdered, she says cheerfully.
Huh, says Oscar, uneasily.
He wonders, does Jess sense something in him? She isn't the first to see dark things in Oscar. One girl had a theory that he was a sociopath because of his inability to form meaningful relationships. And she was proved right, maybe, because he never formed one with her. Not that she actually seemed to mind him being a sociopath. In fact, just after she'd said it, they had urgent, rushed sex. Not so much sex as a collision, a car accident in which nobody wants to admit responsibility, and afterwards nobody looks anyone else in the eye. Sometimes Oscar thinks he attracts the wrong kind of girls. Afterwards, Oscar went online and did a test to find out if he was a sociopath. He failed the test. Apparently, he had too much empathy. He didn't know how to charm either, let alone how to turn it on and off. And he didn't do anything, so he couldn't answer yes when he was asked, "Do you believe you're the best at what you do?" All in all, the only psychopathic tendency he had was to get in trouble with the law. Another friend had once speculated that Oscar was autistic, but when Oscar did some "Are you autistic?" quizzes, he wasn't on that spectrum either. An Australian girl he dated once probably came closest to a diagnosis. She said Oscar didn't talk about anything real. She said, "You ask about me, right? And I talk about work and what I did today and people I know. If I know someone really well, I talk about my family and school and exes and stuff. If I know them even better, I start talking about what kind of future we might want. Like, together. But I ask about you, and I get nothing. You talk about, I don't know, monkeys in space, and what's your favourite type of river, and Occam's razor, and Russell's teapot, and what if Chekhov's gun shot Schrodinger's cat, and the world's longest beard? It's just all so fucking whimsical." Oscar was interested. "The world's longest beard? I said that? How long was it?" "It's just an example. You're lucky you're so fucking beautiful, or this wouldn't be cute. It'd get really bloody irritating." The way she said it made it sound like she was a bit irritated already. Another time, near the end, she said, "Hanging out with you, Oscar, is like being stuck in some abstract painting. All swirls and no actual bloody picture." "Like a Mandelbrot set," Oscar almost said, then thought better of it. But that's it. Nobody has ever been able to put their finger on what's wrong with Oscar, because the wrongness comes not from a nameable thing, but an absence of any nameable things, a swirling of not a lot, circling a core of nothing at all. "Oscar," says Jess. "Hello? You vanished."
"Sorry," Oscar says.
"You looked really weird, actually. Is everything okay?"
"Totally fine," he says. "Sorry."
"Fair enough," says Jess, dropping the subject. She drops it so quickly that he wonders if she's really one of them, a double agent. But probably a double agent wouldn't keep encouraging him to strangle her. Jess, apparently abandoning the idea of having sex with Oscar, lies back on the bed now and sighs. "Anya's being so ridiculous," she says.
"In what way?" he asks.
Jess embarks on some complicated backstory about a love triangle between her friends. Names she has mentioned before crop up again, and Oscar can't place who they belong to. He topples gently backwards onto the bed next to her.
Sorry, this is boring, Jess says.
No, I'm listening. He is listening. He envies Jess just for having a story like this to tell. Envies Atticus too. You can't have a fallout without having a friend. You can't have family problems without having a family. There's closeness there, even if it's angry and messed up. Real people have arguments, resentments, which may or may not be forgiven. They get so close to other people that they can hate them and love them at the same time. Oscar can't imagine what that feels like. He hates nobody. He loves nobody. There are people he likes, lots of them. People he feels guilty about, more of them. People he's frightened of, the men wearing suits. He doesn't know how many of them there are. Confidential was what they said in that meeting years ago. The terms of the money are confidential. The man who said he was representing Oscar's interests, Oscar had never seen this man before in his life, told him to accept the money. He said it was the best thing for Oscar. They talked about Oscar while Oscar was still in the room. He understands what this means, right? I understand that I have suffered brain damage as the result of an incident I can't remember, and as a result, my long-term memory has been affected, which is why I am being given money, but I have to keep this money secret, Oscar said loudly, or else. Well, said someone. He gets it, said someone else. Let's move on. Now, Oscar didn't know exactly what was going on. But he wasn't a total moron. He could tell when people were lying, for a start. He could also see that everyone in the room wanted the same thing, for Oscar to take the secret money. Oscar was the only one who was unconvinced. He was also outnumbered. There seemed like only one sensible course of action. Oscar agreed with everything they said. Then he left the room, went straight to the station, and got on the next train. And since then, he'd done nothing to draw attention to himself, kept out of trouble, kept the secret, moving all the time from country to country, at least until the day he got cocky and stayed in a fancy hotel, and they came for him again. Oscar can only guess they want to haul him off to that room he remembers, to the white light, white coat hanging on the door, the fake leather reclining chair with its creaky plastic cover. Oscar doesn't think so. Thanks all the same, but no. Fuck that. Oscar's been staying at Jess's Riyadh for a few days now. There's been no sign that anyone's tracked him here, no phone calls, no men in suits, no letters, and so he's whistling as he heads out to meet Jess, who's been shopping all day and now wants to get a cocktail, crossing the central courtyard of the Riyadh, nearly tripping over the house tortoises. One of them is butting the other. It takes a step back, tucks its head in, then lunges. There is a dull, emphatic clunk.
What's going on? Oscar asks a passing doorman. They were friends yesterday. What even makes a tortoise angry?
They are not angry. They are about to make love.
Wow, Oscar says.
He thinks he ought to remember this, so he can tell Jess that she has the sexual peccadilloes of a female tortoise. He's turning to go when he hears, from the Riyadh manager's office,
Is there an Oscar Levy staying here?
He looks through the doorway at the back of a man's head. He doesn't recognize it, though that doesn't mean anything. Beyond that is the manager's head, face on. The manager looks up, over the man's shoulder, catches sight of Oscar.
Oscar turns and runs. He hurries through the front door of the Riad behind another couple, nearly crashing into them, shouting an apology to the startled doorman, running, without looking back, straight into the Medina. Once he's far enough away, he keeps walking, for hours, never entirely sure whether he's losing his pursuer or circling closer and closer towards him. At some point, thinks Oscar, he's going to look back and think it's funny that his life was once saved by two tortoises having sex. The tortoises remind him of Jess. He was supposed to be meeting her at some bar, however long ago. He doesn't know the time. His phone's out of power, and he has no charger. The sky has turned a dark purple. The minaret is unhelpfully silent. He asks a kid the time, and he says he'll tell Oscar for 10 dirhams. 5 dirhams. 2 dirhams. But Oscar doesn't have any change. He keeps walking. Night falls. After a while, exhausted, Oscar sits down on a bench in one of the parks just outside the Medina walls, in the dingy, not quite light, before the dawn. The park is as green as it gets here. Scuffed grass, dotted with orange trees. A stray dog trots over and collapses with a sigh by his feet, like it's Oscar's own dog come to find him. It's sandy-coloured, with a black muzzle. He wishes he could take it with him, but a stray dog can't adopt another stray dog. A home-owning creature is needed, one that can fill out paperwork. Time passes. The sun comes up in a splodge of orange and gold. The minaret starts up. The dog gets up and lopes away to start its working day. Oscar walks back into the Medina, to the main square. It's empty. Just a few cars, people unloading crates. He's used to walking through and having 50 people shouting at him. It was reassuring. If Oscar didn't exist, he couldn't be asked to sample some lamb. If he didn't have a body, he wouldn't be offered a seat. If he didn't have a future, nobody would offer to tell it to him. Oscar, the people cried. You're alive. We see you. Now, in the middle of the city, Oscar misses the city. He misses himself being in it. He's here, but not as a real person. His presence is basically a haunting. He realizes Atticus wasn't a ghost. Oscar was the ghost all along. That'd be a good twist. Though he can't help but feel he's seen it somewhere before. I hate nobody, he thinks. I love nobody. What kind of human is that? He walks to the taxi ranks and asks to go to the airport. The driver, comfortingly, recognizes him as a person and promptly overcharges him. Oscar gets into the car and sits back against the cracked leather interior. He opens both of his windows so that the gritty air currents can flow over him. He notes that the doors are unlocked. He tries not to feel trapped. He was trapped before, once. Maybe other times. He'd shouted for them to let him out. It didn't work. Nobody came and opened the door. Why would they? He can't think of any real-life story or film situation where someone locked up managed to get out by shouting. But he couldn't stop. He shouted until his voice burned out. Why am I here? What are you doing to me? Let me out! At length, they answered, We're helping you. Which is what nobody good ever said in any film, ever. Oscar has to wait a few hours at Marrakesh Airport before he can get on a flight. He buys a Fanta and a charger for his phone, finds a small table near a power socket, plugs the phone in, sits down to wait in the undercooked fluorescent lighting that colours everything dirty yellow. He wants to say goodbye to Jess and thank her, if thanking her wouldn't seem weird.
She never seemed to mind if Oscar didn't say anything substantial, which was nice, because she was clever. He'd seen her reading Infinite Jest. And she had a lot of political opinions, which she threw at him from time to time, as if expecting some sort of quick-fire volleyball debate, but it all landed short. Thud, thud, thud. The most interesting thing he's ever had to tell her is that she's like a tortoise in bed, for fuck's sake. She deserves a decent goodbye. The phone turns on at last. Texts from Jess appear. At the bar. Want me to order you something? Hey, everything okay? Where are you? Okay, I'm getting worried now. Where are you? I'm back at the Riad. Text me and let me know if you're dead or something. If you're not dead, don't bother coming to my room later. I'll be asleep. He texts her instead to say sorry and goodbye. She doesn't reply. Oscar's only ever told one person about the extent of his memory problem, his old flatmate, Karolina, from Budapest. What have I got? Oscar said to her once. Nothing. No memory, so nothing. Karolina thought about it for a bit. Then she said, I don't think you need memory. You do have a past. You have influences. Whatever happened, happened, whether or not you remember it. Just because you can't remember the ingredients, it doesn't mean you're not a cake. It's kind of weird not knowing what flavor cake I am. But you do. I know, and I've only known you 6 months. You like being in the sunshine, right? You worry about animals going hungry. You're often late. You're kind. That's more than just momentary stuff. Those are traits. Is that the right word? Don't ask me, Oscar said. I'm shit with words. That's just memory again, she said. It's not important. Yeah, said Oscar. Fuck memory. Who needs it? And he agrees with her, up to a point. He does feel as if he knows things about himself, but because he's not sure if he was any of these things before, these traits don't reassure him. He doesn't know how long he's had them, or where they came from, or if they'll persist. And there are things he does remember, partly, and these things seem to contradict the traits he's got now. Like, for example, he isn't really tempted by drugs. But he knows he had a heroin problem in his late teens, early 20s. Where did that go? How does an opiate addiction disappear? Like how Karolina thinks he's kind, but he remembers distinctly and without being able to call any specific crimes to mind, being in trouble with the police. He remembers being 16 and stealing his friend's dad's gun. And let's not fuck about here, Oscar, he thinks. Let's get to the point. All this wondering about traits and cakes because he can't name what's really on his mind. But how can he? He couldn't have said to Karolina, I'd like to know what stealing a gun and keeping it for years might be indicative of, character-wise. I'm worried that I can't remember what happened in that closed-down supermarket at night. Where those people went. Those shady characters I was friends with. The way they all seemed to vanish. One night I showed them the gun, the next night, I don't know. Where did they go? Where did the gun go? Why can I remember everything about the gun except what happened to the gun? Karolina, I'm worried that I can't remember anything about the first 16 years of my life. Karolina, I'm worried that I have a bank account full of money and I have to keep it a secret. Karolina, I'm worried that one of my traits might be murdering people. Karolina,
I'm worried that I own a necklace that seems to be made out of teeth.
Carolina?
Where are you going?
Oscar can't go back either and ask Carolina what happens when things that were once constant traits start to shift, to expand, like his thing about water.
It's almost time to board. He looks at his phone. Nothing from Jess. What did he want from her anyway? To say, "Don't feel bad, Oscar. I totally get it. You stood me up, then told me you had to leave the country and you can't explain why. No worries. Happens to us all. Have a nice life."
Oscar drops the phone into the bin beside him. Does he even want Jess to care about him? If she did care and was hurt at him leaving so quickly, then he'd feel guilty. But if she didn't care at all and doesn't miss him, that's a different kind of pain. He swings between the two. If the world was a reasonable place, someone who couldn't decide what sort of pain to feel shouldn't feel any. Unfortunately, it hasn't worked that way. He misses Jess. He misses everyone. Even if he can't remember their names, he remembers what it was like to be around them for a little while. He feels like he's opening books at random, reading a few lines, putting them back, never getting to an ending. What's Lonnie doing now? Will Atticus's brother patch things up with their parents? Will Jess forgive Anya? Did Carolina keep anything of his, just to remember the weird guy with no memory who stayed with her once? Is that Atticus? Or has Oscar finally gone insane with despair or sleep deprivation or just standard issue madness? No, it's definitely Atticus. He's at a different gate, standing in a queue, about to go through a doorway. He spotted Oscar at the same time that Oscar's spotted him. Atticus's parents are just in front of him, handing over their boarding passes, oblivious to Atticus waving. He mouths something that Oscar guesses has to be, "Goodbye, Oscar." Oscar raises his hand back, mouths back, "Goodbye, Atticus." He wants to add, "And thanks for being a friend, because that's really what you were. And I know I might have acted like you were just a nuisance sometimes, but actually I was happy and I'm grateful." But he doesn't think Atticus would get all that. Then the queue moves and Atticus is gone. Oscar doesn't often cry, but sometimes his eyes prickle. Maybe he has gone mad. He doesn't know why, but he feels like this seeing Atticus is a good sign of some sort, of something. He rubs his eyes. When he opens them again, there's a man sitting opposite to him. It's the same man who was asking for him at Jess's riad. He's not wearing a suit, just a shirt and chinos. He's about 40. He has small black eyes, half blanketed in folded skin.
"Hi, Oscar. Why are you leaving?" the man says.
He has an air of tired, saddened affection that Oscar recognizes from his extensive experience of movie villains. The ones who say rueful things like, "Oscar, Oscar, Oscar. Look what a merry dance you've led us," before suddenly breaking the protagonist's legs. Oscar stands up quickly, his metal chair giving an outraged squawk. People look over at him. He can't tell which people might be complicit and which are just nosy.
"Wait a minute," the man says. "Just wait. Aren't you tired of this? Running?"
"Too close," thinks Oscar. Too much his own thought. He wonders if they have some means of seeing inside his head. But, he thinks, and maybe this is a voice that they've put in his head, maybe it's his own, he's not
wrong, is he?
Oscar hesitates.
Oscar, says the man.
His voice, too, is compelling.
Don't you want to know, at least, what you're running away from?